Hey, welcome back to this podcast. This is Brian. I am sans Johnny right now. He's at work like a sucker because work is for suckers. Anyway, just kidding. This is a special bonus episode brought to you with an interview by the great and amazing Jay Torres, who I just had one of the best conversations about comics I've ever had. You might recognize Jay's name. He's done lots of work for Oni, lots of work for DC and Marvel. He currently has a book out from Oni called The Mighty Zodiac, which you may have heard me talk about previously on the show, that the Kidbot 07, who you would remember previously from the show, discovered on her own and decided it was going to be her new book to read, so it's added to my poll. Jay's the author of that. I had to reach out and thank him for writing an awesome book that drew my kid in. So it turns out he has a great all-ages book called Robots coming out. There's a couple Teen Titans books coming out, of reprints of Teen Titans Go. So sit back, enjoy the interview. Jay's great. He gives a lot of really interesting feedback on the industry as a whole, digital, lots of things that we're all interested in. So this is my interview with Jay Torres. All right, so I'm here with Jay Torres on the line, all the way from the Great White North in Toronto. Is that right, Jay?
Yeah, I'm just outside Toronto.
Awesome. I was in Toronto a couple years ago, and I loved it. It's such a cool town.
Yeah, it's a great city.
I definitely want to get back there. And I was there when all the Occupy stuff was going on, and there was like Occupy Toronto, and I stopped one of the girls, and I was like, what do you guys really have to be upset about? You're Canadian. But anyway, all right, so... listeners, Jay Torres is a comic book writer. He's done some work for DC, for Marvel. He's done a bunch of indie stuff. I actually found out about him, rediscovered him, because I didn't realize, Jay, with the Teen Titans Go, that was you until we had some Twitter conversation. But because the Kidbot 07 had found the Mighty Zodiac, which is your new book from Oni Press, with what's Ren's last name?
Cowell.
Thank you.
Howell. Yeah. Thurston and Lovey from Gillian's Island.
So her art is great in that for sure. And the story was a lot of fun. But so I reached out to you on Twitter, and lo and behold, you're on the show. So thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So just real quick, the first thing we always ask creators is how did you get into comics? And I'm sure you've answered this 100 times, and I apologize for it being a cliche, but it's also like a great question to kick off.
Yeah, it is. And I don't get too tired of answering it, but essentially I started as a reader, very young. My dad was a comic reader, so there was always comics around the house. And I would try to draw and write my own comics from a very young age. But flash forward to sometime in the 90s when I was in college, and I got together with my friend Tim Levins, and we started producing what we at the time were calling mini comics. I mean, some people call them zines.
Yeah.
basically, they're homemade comics. You photocopy them yourself, fold them, hand staple them, and sell them at conventions in Artist Alley, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I remember seeing those around my campus when I was in college.
Yeah, this was in Montreal where I went to university. So there was a really vibrant sort of mini comic zine, indie scene going on at the time. So we did this thing called Copybook Tales, which was sort of a situation comedy type comic book about kids growing up in the 80s, going to school, going to college in the 90s, and then trying to break into comics. So it was kind of meta. It was a little bit about us.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about that, and what I tell a lot of the younger, aspiring comic book creators now, is that this was just at the dawn of the internet age, just at the start of when people started getting email addresses from school and have accounts with AOL. People remember AOL and how we used to get all those free download CDs all the time, right?
Yeah, what was it, like 200 free hours and all that nonsense?
Right. And we used to still do dial-up and get that crazy pinging and, scratchy noise
thing. That's actually my ringtone on my cell phone.
That's awesome.
I'll get a call in public, and inevitably someone around my age or a little bit older will just look at me and give me the head nod. Like, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from. Yeah, yep. So it was around that time, and... what we did with this mini comic is we would try to sell them online. So this was like going on Usenet before Twitter and Facebook.
GeoCities.
Trying to get people to pay a dollar for this thing. But one of the other things we did, and this is really important, is that we sent them out to various publishers, various editors.
Nice.
And at the time, we had no idea how to do this. So we would send to everybody from like Disney Comics, DC Comics, Marvel, with no clue about how people broke into those companies. And of course, a lot of the indie indie companies that we could find the addresses for. And eventually, we got some replies, and some people, one company in Los Angeles called SLG, which was the home of Milk and Cheese and Johnny the Homicidal Maniac.
Yeah.
They offered to publish the copybook tales as a regular comic, and that kind of launched our careers.
From awesome. Then,
We got the attention of different editors and publishers at Oni, at DC, at Marvel, and it kind of went from there.
Right.
Some people still do it that way. I still go to conventions and I see some people with zines and mini comics that they make on their own, but because of the internet, most people do it the web comics way.
Yeah, I always tell people to go to Tumblr if they want to start a comic book, because that seems to be like the way to get into the business now, is to have a popular Tumblr blog.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even have to be popular. You have to just reach the right people.
Yeah, I guess that's so true.
If you're following the right editors, the right, even fellow creators who just happen to know somebody who's looking for an artist or a writer. The interesting thing about us with Copybook Tales, we made fans out of I can think of at least three key people. One was C.B. Cebulski.
Nice.
Who later went on to be one of the big guys at Marvel.
Yep.
Another one was a guy named Dave Roman, who used to be an intern at DC and then went on to be an editor at Nickelodeon and ended up giving me work over there.
Cool.
And
is that how you got the DeGrasse comic?
Actually, that was another fan.
Okay.
Discovering some other work. So, I mean, that's all it's about.
Yeah.
One book and another person discovers it and they hire you for another. You put your work out there and it usually leads to more work. So, the key thing about what happened to us with Copybook was that some of our early fans went on to, become gatekeepers in comics, which really helped us out.
Awesome. That's so cool. You kind of hacked your way into it, really, with, just the self-publishing really quick, putting out a lot of content. That's great. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about networking, and it's true. People say, it's who you know. But how do you get to know people? You got to get out there, go to conventions, give them your stuff.
Yeah.
And you have to have stuff to start with. So many guys I know keep telling me, I want to be in comics, but are you actually making comics?
Right. Yeah, because we hear that a lot from people. Like, I want to be in comics. It's like, well, what do you have? Well, like, let us see it. We'll review it. And it's like, oh, I don't have it yet. I'm still writing it. Or,
exactly.
It's with the printer, which, you hear that for years. And it's like, okay, you don't have a comic.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I remember reading something that Bendis wrote. Somebody had asked him, how do you break into the comic industry? And he said, make a comic.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, you're in the industry. And he's right.
Yeah. I think probably the best example of that is Kirkman with The Walking Dead and stuff. He just kind of started writing stuff and it picked up. And now it's, a huge book and middling to fair TV show.
No, you're right. I mean, you have to make something to go somewhere with it, right?
Yeah.
To make something for people to discover and take it from there.
Yeah, that's great. All right, so you have this great dynamic body of work. You've done stuff for Marvel, for DC. You've done a lot of independent stuff. Can you just quickly tell us a little bit about what it's like working with the big two? Like, you have the Teen Titans Go book, which was really, really, really popular. So much to the fact that after it got canceled, like, the fan support brought it back for, what was it, 8 more issues, I think?
5 or 6 we got past the original.
Okay.
Cancel date, yeah.
And I remember the Legion of Superheroes and the 31st Century book that you wrote. Like, the Legion's one of my favorites, and when I was going through your stuff, I was like, oh, I have that book. I think I have the entire run. But, it's one of those things. So can you just kind of share a little bit about what it's like from taking that independent spirit and moving it over to, the more corporate side of comics?
Well, I mean, the major difference is that, at least, you know, from the standpoint of somebody who's who started in the indies and sort of worked my way up, I mean, the main difference is there's a regular paycheck. It's, you know, like, if you're on a monthly book, you're quite fortunate to be able to just, you know, keep going. And I was on that gig for over 4 years.
Yeah.
And on top of Teen Titans Go, I got to work on a lot of smaller projects here and there at DC, mm-hmm. you know, ranging from Ninja Scroll to some Legends of the Dark Knight to some Wonder Woman. So it was a really, how shall I say, fruitful period.
Sure.
Of my life. And one of the things that kind of led me to sort of withdraw from that is because, you know, you're it's great. I grew up reading these characters, a lot of these characters, and I loved working with them. But at the same time, they're not mine. You know, right. I was basically babysitting them. I had to give them back to their mom and dad at the end of the day, which, again, is fine. It's a great experience. And like I said, the money's good. But eventually you kind of get, you know, you kind of get, it's not really that I was bored. I just wanted to do something different. And starting from a place where I used to do mostly kid-oriented or you know, young reader-friendly type work, I started to get away from that a bit too much, and I wanted to kind of bring myself back into it.
Great.
And unfortunately, neither Marvel or DC at the time were doing a lot of books for younger kids. They were kind of phasing them out.
Yeah, there's still not a lot right now, to be honest. Yeah, you know, it's kind of disappointing.
It is. It's unfortunate. But mind you, what was happening at that time that was exciting was book publishers were starting to get in on the graphic novel thing. Mm-hmm. And they were hungry for material. And they were looking for specifically all ages or reader-friendly material. So that was a perfect time for me to say, you know what, this is a good time to, you know, branch out and do something different. And that's when I started doing, you know, stuff like Bigfoot Boy and some of the stuff over at Oni.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just a good, it was a nice sort of transition. I was lucky in that way. And also at DC, I mean, as much as I love DC, when they got to the New 52 era,
mm-hmm.
there just stopped being any books that I really wanted to contribute to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's been that for the last,
what, 4 years?
Maybe more.
Yeah.
Maybe, it's closing in on 10 years at this point. And it's like people say, why aren't you working for DC anymore? Well, part of it is that, you know, they have to come to me and say, mm-hmm. would you be interested in X? And they haven't, they have from time to time, you know, I've gotten to do, you know, Legends of the Dark Knight, for example.
Right.
And then, but that's when they invite everybody to kind of pitch and you know, what Batman story do you want to tell, that sort of thing. Or you have to go to them and say, oh, I'm really excited about X.
Yeah.
But if I look at what was going on, there was nothing or no way I could think of kind of sliding in something there and
sure.
and doing something. I did a mini series for them called Wonder Girl, and the timing was perfect because I was looking for like something to do with one of the Titans characters mm-hmm. 'cause it was in the DCU, because I was doing the Johnny DC Titans. And an editor said to me, you know what, I've always wanted to do something with Cassie. So we put our heads together and we made this pitch. And it just so happened, this was around the time they were doing that Amazon's attack thing. And so they kind of shoehorned us into it. And so that, you know, that's how it kind of worked. You kind of have to either get invited to the table to participate in the big,
mm-hmm.
you know, the big event that they're doing that year.
Right.
You have to find an in somehow.
So are you excited about Rebirth at all?
A little bit. I feel like, you know, it might be a good restarting point for some of us as fans.
Yeah.
I'm excited about a couple of the titles. Mm-hmm. I really haven't looked into it, you know, seriously.
We did an episode like 3 episodes ago where we went through every book and creative team and like kind of gave our thoughts. So you can go back and listen to that one.
No, I should. Yeah. I mean,
but
they announced it. Was it at Emerald City? So I was there.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
And it was happening. So there was just so much other stuff. The announcements
mm-hmm.
for Rebirth during Emerald City. So I kind of missed a lot of them and I was just playing catch up when I got home.
Yeah, sure.
And then afterwards I said, you know, that's sort of the way it works with the big two. You kind of have to be part of their big plans, the mm-hmm. big, you know, event, or somehow find your way in. You know, into it, or kind of be like an outlier, like you see with stuff like Squirrel Girl or, you know, Hellcat, you know, yeah. they kind of find their own niche.
Yeah.
Which in a way, what the Teen Titans Go and all that Johnny DC stuff was. It kind of let us do our own thing. thing outside of everybody else's, you know, continuity or outside of their sort of view, and we got to do whatever we wanted, which was great.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Like Johnny, my co-host, who's not with us right now, he and I, we grew up on DC, so we've been, you know, really disappointed just with the product lately, and I know for me, I'm excited to have Nightwing back. I'm excited to see some of these creative teams that maybe we haven't seen together before. So I'm definitely, like, as a comic fan, I'm excited, but I'm definitely going into it with you know, tiptoeing in after what happened with the New 52.
Right. Probably the most excited thing, or the thing that I'm most excited about, is the Gerard Way line.
Yeah.
I'm a big Doom Patrol fan, and I know he is too. And I know that based on interviews I've read, you know, Umbrella Academy was inspired by Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol.
Right.
So we'll see what he does with this new Doom Patrol. But he's saying he's going to be involving the entire sort of legacy, if you will, which I'm really interested in, because I'm a big fan of the Silver Age stuff.
Yep.
I'm a fan of the Morrison stuff. Everything else kind of in between. Interested to see what he does. And that whole, I remember liking Shade the Changing Man for a while, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So the new Shade the Changing Girl sounds interesting.
Yeah. And Gerard's like involved with like two, I think, writing two of the books and then like co-writing the other two. So it should be really interesting to see for sure.
Yeah. So those are the ones I'm, I mean, of course the Titans, I want to see what they do with them. Wonder Woman. It'd be interesting to see what they do with those titles.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So, you know, you had all this experience, you know, you wrote the Teen Titans, you've kind of floated in and out of like the Marvel DC worlds. What was it that really like had you transition back full time to being, you know, the indie creator, the create your own stuff? And maybe tell us a little bit about your relationship with Oni Press, because I know for me, my relationship with Oni Press was always Whiteout and Queen and Country with Greg Rucka. So I'm always excited when they put out a good book.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is it looks like I kind of took a break from working with Oni for a while there, but I actually never did.
Oh, okay.
What happened was one or two books that I was, that I had written for them just got stalled because of the artist. I have one book over there that's been in production for, oh my goodness, like 5 years now. Oh. Our first artist, I can't even remember what happened, our first artist. And then somebody took over for that guy, and then they had to bail because of personal reasons. And then we went to a third artist, and that person got sick and kind of had to bow out. And now we're on to, I think, our fourth, maybe fifth artist for this one book. And we're calling it the cursed book because it just doesn't seem to want to get done. But we'll see. This is, it's actually not, it's one of my mature readers books. It's,
okay.
It's actually a zombie book. And decidedly not for kids, but it's one of those things that's just, you know, just taking its time to come out.
Yeah.
So there's this gap. I was just waiting for this book to come out that looked like I wasn't doing anything for Oni. And Mighty Zodiac was one of those other books that was sort of in a holding pattern just because I was doing other stuff and we were waiting to see what would happen with the other book. And then finally we just said, you know what, let's just get this book done. You know, never mind about the other book. And then Robots happened real quickly, so it looks like all of a sudden I'm back at Oni, but I never actually, you know, left. There's just this gap in between certain books because of delays.
Right. Yeah, no, that's awesome. So you mentioned Robots, sorry. It's I read it. It was so fun to read. It's you and artist Scott Dove. It comes out what, in the middle of May?
Sean Dove.
And oh, sorry, Sean. I had that written wrong, but Sean, yeah. Okay.
It comes out, I want to say mid-May. We're actually debuting it at TCAF, the Toronto Comics Arts Festival, which is May 14th and 15th, I think.
Very cool.
So I think it hits stores the following week.
Okay.
Yeah, so Robots is just one. I mean, I wrote Robots specifically for my boys, who at the time were 4 and 7.
Okay.
So they're a year older now. And it's one of the, I mean, they love robots, of course. I mean, what little boy doesn't, you know, what little girl doesn't? And at one point, I just remember them coming home from school and they started calling each other bro. Yeah. It's not a thing that I do. I mean,
no. Yeah, I've experienced the same thing. It's the whole bro this, bro that.
Yeah.
It's like,
you're a little girl. I just thought it was the cutest and the funniest thing. And from that, you know, I just sort of came up with this idea for a trio of three robot brothers called the Brobots. Mm-hmm. And from there, I developed a story. And, you know, I was looking for an artist. And I'd always wanted to work with Sean. I'd mm-hmm. wanted to work with him for the longest time. And I just thought his style was perfect because I was kind of looking for sort of that kind of Cartoon Network aesthetic that we see now.
Right.
Like Adventure Time and Regular Show and all those guys, Steven Universe. He's kind of got that vibe. But at the same time, he watched a lot of the same shows and movies that I did growing up, from, you know, Godzilla and Voltron, you know, all those sort of giant robot, giant monster, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, Japanese films and animation. So it was just a perfect fit, I thought.
Yeah, no, I liked all three of them. They reminded me of GoBots, but not in a bad way.
Right.
Yeah, just the whole thing. And then with the kaiju attack and that little twist there, which I won't spoil for anyone so they can go read it. What was great, but it's like I told you in the DM that I sent you before. Like I smiled the entire time I read this because it was so much fun. And then when I showed it to the kid, she was, you know, walking around, you know, saying bro even more, and you know, she really loved it. So
yeah, I knew that it was going to resonate with kids when I read it to my kids and the way they reacted.
Yeah,
and then we sent it to Scotty Young, and his kid Baxter had the same reaction. So we thought, okay, we've got something here that I think kids are going to dig, because you never know, right? Mm-hmm. You just never know what kids are going to, you know, be into or not. And so this was a good sign that I think we have a, you know, something that appeals to that demographic.
Yeah, no, like I said, it's great. And the more all ages books that are out there, the happier I am. Just because, you know, it keeps my daughter entertained and, you know, sure. excited about the medium and, you know, more importantly, reading. Like, yeah, that's the important part for me, is just that she's reading. Yeah, well, so no, this is exciting. It comes out. Sorry?
This might be an exclusive.
Oh.
What's the word I'm looking for? Oh my goodness, I just lost.
Spoiler?
No, not a spoiler. But like the first time that this is being announced publicly, but we are doing a second Robots book.
Awesome. Very, very cool.
Yeah, we're aiming for the same time next year, so around May. I've got an outline. I just have to write it, and then Sean's going to draw it, and it should be, you know, out around the same time next May. I know most people listening to this are like, we haven't even seen the first one. Just so you know, there's going to be another one.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm excited about that, and I will definitely look for that. Yeah, that's wow, that's so cool. All right, so my next question was actually where did the story come from, but you already answered that. So, you know, working with some of these other things like the Teen Titans Go and things like that, can you tell me more about like the Mighty Zodiac? Because like it seems to be it's a 6-issue miniseries, and it seems to be very ambitious because there's 12 main characters, and I'm just kind of curious as to how, you know, all of that story is going to get covered in, you know, 6 issues.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is I have a lot more story to tell than we've got in the first 6 issues. So the first 6 issues, or I keep saying the first, but these 6 issues do tell a story that mainly revolves around their master, mm-hmm. Master Long, who's an ailing dragon. He's dying of a disease that's keeping him from fulfilling his destiny and properly training his clan,
right?
And that leads to all sorts of trouble. So this story is about what happens when 6 stars fall out of the sky, and Master Long thinks those stars can help cure him, and he sends out his clan to go get the stars, and then what happens there, you know, takes place over the 6 issues. You know, how many stars they manage to get or not, who survives, who doesn't, and then what happens to the clan from that point on. So I'm hoping that the book does well enough that we can continue the story. I've got a sequel planned in my head. I've already got a bunch of outlines for, you know, the backstories involving these different characters and how they got to this point.
Oh, cool.
Some of that we do see in the story as we, you know, as we go along in these 6 issues. But there's definitely almost every single one of them has, you know, enough for their own, at least one shot. And then what what happens after this story. You know, there's more stories to tell for sure. So we're not going to cover, you know, the entire epic in six issues, but mm-hmm. certainly a pretty, I like to think so, you know, exciting and dramatic and funny story in those six issues.
Yeah, like I read through it and it was great. And I was really happy it was something that she picked up. You know, and when I told her it's only six issues, she was like, well, that's not cool. But she has reminded me probably every other day that the second issue comes out on May 18th, according to the back of the book. Right. So you definitely have a fan there. Actually, awesome. She was carrying it around everywhere she went for like the first 2 days, and to the point where I bagged and boarded it for her. And it's like, here, let's not ruin this.
That's so cool.
Yeah. But yeah, so I guess the Teen Titans Go, if we can talk about that for a little bit. You have a new volume of that. Is it two new volumes coming out? Or collections, sorry.
Yeah, so what's for people who may not know, so the Teen Titans Go was a monthly comic that lasted 55 issues. And I wrote 54 of those issues. DC originally published, I think it was four digest collections. Mm-hmm. So they were like the size of the Archie digest, but there was only about five stories in each of them. So they published four of those and then stopped doing that for some reason. I guess maybe they weren't selling as well as they wanted to. And then they decided to publish the fifth one, which collected, you know, the subsequent five or six stories in a regular trade paperback. Mm-hmm. Right, and that thing sold really well.
Oh, cool.
So they decided to go back and republish the first four volumes in the regular trade size. So the first one was called Truth, Justice, and Pizza. Mm-hmm. And I think that came out in the fall. So the second one volume is called Heroes on Patrol, which comes out at the end of May.
Okay.
So eventually they're going to publish two more next year that'll catch us up to the fifth trade, which I'm guessing by the time they get to, they'll have to reprint.
Yeah.
And then there'll be three more, I believe, after that to complete the entire run.
Very cool.
I guess the sales from the regular size trades were good enough that they decided, you know, we need to republish the whole thing.
That's awesome. That, I mean, like, right. That must feel really good to know that, like, it's living on and
oh, yeah.
With the popularity and everything.
Well, the interesting thing about the Titans is even though, you know, the book stop publication, I can't even remember, 6-7 years ago now.
Yeah,
it keeps selling.
Yeah,
you know, I still get royalties for reprints, especially like overseas and digital downloads and stuff like that. So for some reason, you know, people still like it, and I guess now they want to go wider with the collection, which is great.
Yeah, that's awesome. So who's your favorite Titan
from this incarnation? I would probably have to say Raven.
Okay.
Because she's just, well, first of all, she's the most powerful of the Titans, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But also, I just like her kind of sarcastic and kind of like abrasive attitude.
Yeah. I always think of her as being very dour and just kind of like off-putting. But like at the same time, she's like a hero and it's awesome.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, especially Beast Boy, she puts Beast Boy down. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Or Starfire, because Starfire, they're like the exact opposite in the mm-hmm. book. One is sunshine, one is darkness. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, it's one of the things I like writing the best was kind of putting the two up against each other, you know, personality wise. It was a lot of fun.
Cool. Yeah. No, that's fun. So like outside of the Teen Titans Go, do you have a favorite Titan?
Well, it depends which iteration. If it was the original Titans, it'd probably have to be Wonder Girl.
Okay, nice.
So Donna, and if it's the new Teen Titans, it's probably Robin, as in Dick Grayson.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always it depends which version of the Titans.
My answer is always really easy because Dick Grayson's my favorite character in all of comics. So like my favorite Titan, Dick Grayson. You know, just Robin, Nightwing, doesn't matter. But yeah, no, that's cool. So, of the, you know, of like Marvel and DC, like, are there any characters that you are just dying, like, is your dream to write for?
You know, I think for Marvel and sometimes I kind of deny it. I think I'm over it, but then I realize I probably never will be over it. I think I would like to get my hands on Alpha Flight for some one-shot or miniseries.
Yeah.
But it would have to be like John Byrne's Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
So right now they're kind of all over the place. The last time I heard they were with Captain Marvel at some point, mm-hmm. or with Carol Danvers, I think, Puck and Aurora. So I don't even know what's going on with the team these days. And then a couple of them were with, what is it? There was like the Extreme X-Men team.
Back in the mid, like, early 2000s, right? With
recently too, there was
I forgot about that one, yeah.
With Phantom X and Psylocke and North Star was in there somewhere with Puck at one point.
Yeah.
Anyways, all over the place. So I would like to do, if I could make a wish and do whatever book I wanted in Marvel, it would be like a Alpha Flight, The Lost Years. So it would take place somewhere during the Byrne era.
Oh, cool.
So, I mean, that's just me, right? That's just my wishful thinking.
Yeah.
And then at DC, I still kind of would like to get my hands on the mainstream DCU Titans.
Oh, yeah. Just
for like a miniseries. But again, I'd be very specific. Like, I would either like to do a new Teen Titans Lost Years or original Titans Lost Years. And if it was like a modern day one, I guess it would have to depend on what else is going on in the DCU. Because, then some of the characters are dead and some of the characters would be with, like, Cyborg's with the League now.
Right, right.
So it would be like a weird kind of, I'd have to kind of, pick a different team and figure out what to do with them. So mostly, both these answers are obviously coming out of nostalgia.
Yeah.
So to do something new, I'd have to really study the current universe and what's going on.
What do you think of the addition of Damian Wayne to the Teen Titans that's happening with Rebirth here?
I kind of like the character, but the funny thing is I kind of feel like I don't know him well enough to judge how he would be with the Titans, but I like him as part of the Batman family.
Yeah, he's very much like he's a 10-year-old kid who's been raised to be like a badass, right?
Yeah.
And like he doesn't do well taking orders or being a part of a team. So it'll be interesting to see how they pull it off and if they can continue the growth of the character in that way.
Right.
But yeah, so no, that's cool. All right. So what are you currently reading?
Right now I'm catching up on Lumberjanes. I'm probably a handful of issues behind. I really, really love that series. And I just also started reading Kaiju Max.
Mm-hmm.
Xander Cannon, which is another Oni book. And on the top of my reading pile, let me see here, I've got Totally Awesome Hulk, Plutonia, Wonder Woman Earth One. So that's my next to read.
I'm really digging Amadeus Cho as a Hulk.
Me too.
It's been fun. And I don't know if you read the crossover with Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. But that was really interesting too. I'd highly recommend that if you're enjoying him.
Oh, for sure. And also, I'm trying to catch up with Slott and All Red Silver Surfer. I read the first trade digitally, and I really, really liked it. I was never a big Silver Surfer fan, but all of a sudden, these guys have made him really interesting to me.
Yeah, he's like vulnerable for the first time with his companion, if you will, around.
There is that vibe, that whole Doctor Who kind of thing going on there.
Yeah, I think Dan Slott's like a really huge Doctor Who fan too, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
So you brought up an interesting point with digital a couple times now. Like, you get your digital royalties, you read some digital books. How do you feel about the the availability of these books through things like Comixology or Marvel Unlimited, and the ability to carry a library with you, on your tablet?
Well, you just said it. I mean, it's amazing that I could carry thousands of books with me on my iPad.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's amazing, and to have it at your fingertips almost anytime, anywhere, without having to go into your basement or closet and dig up boxes. I think it's a wonderful thing. I do wish that they were a little less expensive, digitally speaking.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about what Marvel's doing is, you buy the paper copy, you get the digital code. which works for me.
Yeah, me too. I pull the code out and I bag and board the book immediately. You know, I never even open it other than to try and find the whatever, like, fifth to last page that has the code.
Yeah. But that said, I still love, you know, graphic novels and collections and hardcovers especially.
Yeah.
You know, so like the Wonder Woman Earth One, I just had to have in hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's certain books that in order to support the creators, I like to pick up, especially if I can get it directly from them at a convention, which helps, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I like picking up trades in that format. and because I have two younger kids, there are a lot of comics that come out in really nice formats for kids.
Yeah.
And they're not that expensive and they're pretty lightweight. So, you know, you don't need to worry about, you know, carrying around a whole bunch of them. So I kind of have one foot in the print world and one foot in the trade world. The digital world.
Yeah.
But definitely, I mean, I love digital. And from a creator standpoint, the fact that it's, you know, it's opened up a whole new, you know, world of readers.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people on the other side of the world who might say to me, I can't find your book. And I'll just say, hey, you can download it from Comixology or Amazon, you know, within a minute. It's an amazing thing if you think about it.
Yeah, I'm about 50-50 right now. I pretty much, like, the books I mostly get digital are the image books, mainly because, like, you know, I can't wait to hit the comic book store on the weekend for Invincible to come out. I love it too because, like, especially when there's, like, the sales and things like that to really, well, like, kind of catch up on things.
That is the worst, best thing for me. Anytime these guys have a sale, I'm like, oh, I've never tried this book. Oh, 99 cents. Give me 10. You know, it's just, it's too easy, but mm-hmm. at the same time, it's a good thing. Anytime they have a sale, it's like, I'm a sucker.
That was how I got into Morning Glories. I got the first four trades for like $5 each.
And yeah, then... that's the stuff right there. I love it when they do that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I mean, I couldn't tell you whether it's detrimental for the creator as in terms of their royalties.
Yeah.
But in terms of exposure, I think it's terrific. Mm-hmm. And in terms of, you know, the readership, I think it opens up doors that weren't there, you know, 5-10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I probably wouldn't have never picked that book up, like having to get it and be like, oh, I'm 30 issues behind already. I'll wait till it runs a course and I'll pick it up. But no, I can, you know, I got it, I caught up, now I'm monthly on that. Like the same with Chew and those kind of books. So
exactly. And here's the other thing. The only other way as a comic book reader we would have heard about these books is if we sat down every single month and flipped through previews.
I can't do that.
Right. So, and on top of that, you know, you'd have to pre-order in advance
mm-hmm.
without seeing any art.
Yeah.
Whereas with the digital side of things, a lot of times they have the previews on there. You've got the reviews. You've got the synopses. And you can tell. I mean, sure, they're curating these books and it's not everything. But at the same time, if, you know, you've got that algorithm there, you know, if you bought this, you might like that. Or right. Whatever.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, it helps. I mean, it's not perfect for sure, but it's a lot easier than sifting through a 500-page catalog every month.
Yeah, or a dollar box.
Yeah, exactly. And but, again, you know, like if you said to me, oh, have you ever read Chew? And I said, no, I don't have to wait until I get to the store to check it out.
Right.
Actually, I could actually go download. Usually the first issue is free too.
Yeah, a lot of times, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, so I could go download that. And if I like it enough, then I could choose to go to the store and get a trade or download it, you know, download some more.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're like
a great tool.
Comixology is really like a drug dealer that way. Your first taste is free.
Yes.
You get that guided view and you're like, oh, there's no other way to do this. And then the next thing you know, you're upgrading from a 64 gigabyte to 128 gigabyte tablet because there's not enough room for all your comics.
Oh, yeah. And at some point, my to read pile of physical books was totally, you know, taken over by my my virtual pile of
Yeah.
Like it's scary. I mean, I could probably take a month off and do nothing except read, and I still probably wouldn't be able to read everything.
Yeah, it's just scratched the surface, right?
Yeah, which is a good and bad thing, yeah. Right?
So what do you have coming out next? Like, I mean, you have, you know, obviously more Mighty Zodiac. You've got the trades coming out with BroBots, but is there anything else that you're working on outside of those projects that you're excited about?
Well, I'm working on a couple of things that. Probably won't see the light of day until early 2017.
Okay.
One of them that I could talk about is called True Patriot, which is an anthology of Canadian superheroes that me and a bunch of friends are putting together. We kickstarted a couple of, actually, one was Indiegogo, one was Kickstarter, a couple of anthologies, hardcovers, and then a company in Canada called Chapter House, which is the home of Captain Canuck, is going to be reprinting them into trades for us. And then we're going to do a third volume of some sort starting next, early next, well, either the end of this year or beginning of next year. So that book has a bunch of Canadian, creators like Jeff Lemire and
Oh, cool.
Perez, Scott Chandler, Jay Stevens, Adrian Alfona. So just a bunch of guys that are friends of mine, all Canadians with their own, Canadian superhero concept, putting together these short stories for the book. So that's one that I can talk about. Another project I'm doing for Chapter House involves something new, but I don't think I can talk about yet, but it'll be out next year. Anybody who's following the Chapter House universe, which is basically Captain Canuck and this other series called Northgard that's brand new, I'll be adding to that. That's about all I can say for now.
Awesome. Yeah, well, that's very cool. Like, I'm glad you're able to share at least something with us. All right. So, you have Facebook, Twitter, you have a website. Where all can people find you online?
Twitter is at J Torres Comics, and Facebook is the same, facebook.com/JTorresComics. And I think that's me, right?
Okay,
That's it.
yeah.
Yeah, I don't have a Tumblr. Yeah, so just J Torres Comics are the two, are my handle on both Facebook and Twitter.
Great. Awesome. Well, Jay, thanks for taking the time to sit down and chat comics with me. This has been awesome and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And again, thank you for the Mighty Zodiac and helping the kid just fall deeper in love with comics.
Oh, it's like I said, my pleasure. And I just love hearing that kind of stuff.
All right. Well, great. So, thank you again. Have a great night and I'll see you on Twitter.
Take care.
All right. All right, so this is Brian again. I just want to take a minute to thank Jay for coming on the show and being so open and upfront about everything. Just a reminder, BroBots, his All Ages books, comes out in the middle of May. The Mighty Zodiac issue 2 is coming out in May. Keep an eye out for the Teen Titans Go volume 2 out soon, and subsequent volumes coming out. And again, just wanted to say thanks to Jay. You can find him again on Facebook, Jay Torres Comics. Twitter, J Torres Comics. And yeah, this is the Infamous Podcast. You can find us at Infamous Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. If you need more information about us, you can go to infamouspodcast.com. As always, we are very appreciative of 5-star reviews and written reviews. If you have any questions, email me or email us, sorry, at contact@infamouspodcast.com, and we will be happy to discuss things with you. Anyway, again, this is Brian. I'm at Brian Tudor on Twitter and Instagram. Johnny's not with us right now, but he's at Johnny Podorf on Twitter and Instagram. He got that personal branding thing down. But yeah, so thanks for listening. We will be back with a regular show on Friday. I'm not sure what we're talking about yet, but I'm sure it will be pseudo interesting. All right. Have a great day, night, morning, whenever you listen to this. Later.